things get a little bit grim.
But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh my god. You do it just to throw me off.
I know.
Howdy ho.
Heidly ho, Taylor.
Hey, Jenny.
How are things over there in your corner of the table?
They're very well. I have a glass of wine. I'm getting ready to tell you a very ooky spooky paranormal story. I am excited.
What are the odds? I'm getting ready to tell you an ooky spooky ghost story.
Oh my god, we're so cute. I can't take it.
Mine's more ghost adjacent, as usual fashion.
Oh, really?
I can't follow directions.
Ooh, mine's very ghost on the nose.
Okay, good.
Nose ghost.
Balance me out always, the yin to my yang.
Always. That's how we have survived our friendship up until now.
I zig, you zag.
Here we go. We're zigzag team.
There we go. On the same page. Hi, welcome to A Little Bit Grim, a podcast.
We're going to have to start releasing video.
Oh, yeah.
For some of these things that are happening.
We're having like a very physical movement happen.
It's a very visual thing happening for a podcast.
For an audio.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Audio really good experience. Choice. Good creative choice.
It just adds, I feel like you can hear like the spice in our voice.
Yeah.
When we have the movements. We'll start streaming one day.
Yeah, someday. I definitely talk with my hands a lot, and I do the air quotes a lot without sometimes saying air quotes.
Uh-huh.
So, we'll look into it.
It's too bad you can't, like, speak in italics, you know?
Yeah!
Like, why can't we, like, talk, like, slanted?
Slanty talking.
Slanty talk.
I like it.
We'll find a way. Somebody in linguistics, DM us.
Help.
Help, please, we beg. Hi.
Hey. I'm Taylor. That's Jenny.
That's
me. And this is A Little Bit Grim.
Welcome. It's a podcast you're listening to right now. We talk about all kinds of terrible things. Ghosts, true crime, cults, paranormal.
Disasters and folklore.
Disasters and folklore.
Maybe not in that order.
It is certainly not in that order. I can promise you it's not in that order. But today it's ghosts and
it is paranormal day.
It is paranormal day. I'm so excited. It's always nice. A fresh foot, a new cycle, starting over. It's like a breath of fresh air.
It's like spring all over again.
It's like spring. If spring
Persephone has risen.
Oh, God bless America. A breath of fresh air. If the fresh air was filled with ghosts.
I want air filled with ghosts.
Well, you're living it, sister, mister.
That's true. My new house is not haunted, so.
Oh, what a bummer.
I am not sad.
My home has been experiencing some activity.
Ooh.
Recently. I only got spooked once, and then I told it to fucking knock it off. And it did. So.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still the scariest thing in my own house.
That's
love
that.
The goal. You can have ghosts.
Yeah.
You just have to be scarier than them.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Not my forte.
Yeah, it's...
I'm just a little bit of a scaredy cat.
You're not a scary cat. You just have, like, a soft, squishy soul.
That's true.
Which That's is true. Fine.
I cry a lot for somebody that acts bad.
You say you're going to get into bar fights a lot for somebody who, like, cries when they watch a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my aesthetic.
Crying at the Lifetime channel into your popcorn.
Yes. But also be like, I would cut her.
I fucking hate you, but like also leave me alone. I'm having a moment.
Yes. Oh God. Yeah. Okay.
I love it. Okay. So what do you, you're going first.
Yes, I
am. It's Taylor's turn.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what you're going to
tell me.
Creepy tale.
Tell me a story. I am going to tell you the story of the Dauphine Orleans Hotel.
Ooh.
Yay.
Okay. Another haunted hotel I love. I'm having flashbacks to the Congress.
Oh, gosh. Someday we'll go.
We will.
So the Dauphine Orleans Hotel is located just a stone's throw away from Bourbon Street in the French Quarter of New Orleans.
What size of stone?
Pebble.
Okay, got
Very
it.
Very small. It's a block.
Okay, got it.
This hotel is not just one big building. There are rooms and property on both sides of Dauphine Street. Ooh. So it is a property, not just one building.
Phase one, phase two.
Yes. The main building is where you would find your normal rooms, the things that you would book just online without having to ask for anything special. Mm-hmm. There are also cottages, which are a little bit more secluded and separated from the main building.
Love.
And then there is the Herman House guest rooms. Ooh. And these are great for group vacations because they're like little houses.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. And then there is also a suite that you can reserve that is above the restaurant bar that I will talk about later.
Okay. Ew, I love that.
I know, it's so cool. I think I walked past it when we were in New Orleans because it's in the French Quarter.
Okay.
And there's one building that I remember just looking up and being like, this is beautiful. And I think that this might have been this hotel because it was, some of the pictures I found were that, basically like what I remembered. Yeah. There's like lots of hanging plants off the front and it's multi-story. I think it's three stories and there's just balconies everywhere.
Oh, I love the architecture of the French Quarter.
Same. So earliest records show the Dauphine Orleans plot belonged to a Don Andres Almonster y Roxas.
In the French?
Yes.
Antoine.
In the late 1780s, and he also owned and operated most of the real estate in the French Quarter at that time. Dauphine Orleans property and land was purchased and sold many times to several local wealthy families, including the Brotins, Chauvins, and Bonnebelles.
Ooh, I love Bonnebelle.
Yeah, the Creole cottage that would later become May Bailey's, which is the restaurant, May Bailey's famed bordello, and a bordello is a brothel.
Ooh, okay.
Yes.
What a fancy pants name to assign to a brothel.
A bordello.
The high class.
Yes. So May Bailey's is the restaurant bar I'm going to talk about quite a bit.
Okay.
And it's connected to the hotel. So the that cottage that became the bordello was built in 1821. And also in 1821, John James Abudon.
John Jacob.
Not him.
Okay, got it.
The naturalist and painter created his famous Birds of America series while sitting in what is now known as May Bailey's Place.
Is naturalist another word for a nudist?
No.
That sounded like a question. I think it is. I'm going to make it so in my brain. Okay. Just in the story for me, just a little fun part for me. He's a nudist.
All right.
Okay, great. Well, this is how facts happen.
I like it. Yeah, we're gonna run with it. We're gonna go with it. We'll spin off it.
I love. Yeah. Okay, go on.
And the famed Abudon Society was named in his honor. In 1834, prosperous merchant Samuel Herman built his manor with strict instructions and high standards. Only the best brick, sand, and cypress were used in this construction. Just before becoming part of the Dauphine Orleans Hotel, the Herman House served as a small hotel called the Anchor Hotel. And today, guests can stay in the 16 spacious Herman House guest rooms across the street from the main house, which were originally part of his carriage house.
Huh.
So before it was the Anchor, the Herman guest house rooms was at brothel called the White Elephant.
Ew.
And I'm going to talk about the May Bailey's place before I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on the White Elephant, but just know that they are across the street from each other.
Okay.
So in 1857, May Bailey's Bordello, known then as May's Place, opened its doors on the fringe of New Orleans' Storyville Red Light District. Technically, it was called a sporting house, but in reality, it was a brothel.
Uh-huh.
May Bailey's was the first licensed brothel in the city and became one of its most popular and prosperous businesses.
Oh my God, I love that. Yeah. Normalized sex work way back in the day.
Oh, way back.
Love.
you're not going to love the next thing I have to say. Right.
Thank you for the...
And we just have to... It was the 1800s. I apologize. So May opened the brothel due to necessity and under the ordinance concerning lewd and abandoned women.
What? Tag yourself, I'm lewd.
I can't. She was actually given a license to operate her business. So this ordinance gave her the license to operate, but I just hate that the ordinance was called lewd and abandoned women.
When really it's just women who can read.
Business women.
Right.
Meh. And anytime I see the word lewd, I just go to all of my cat Facebook groups where the naked cats are.
Lewd and nude.
They're so cute.
They're little chicken titties.
I like it. The operating license is still hanging in the bar today.
Wow.
It's framed. You can see it.
Oh,
so cool.
I love when people keep documents like that.
Me too. So May's younger sister, Millie, also worked in the brothel, but sources say that she was super resentful and did not want to be employed by the bar, and she did not want anything to do with the red light district. She was just super snooty about it.
Love.
May's place was a staple within the French Quarter, and it remained that way even when the section of town was formalized into Storyville, which is the legalized social reform movement to quarantine all brothels into a 38-block radius in 1897.
Okay.
So
weird zoning, but okay.
Yeah. So this is today what we know as pretty much the French Quarter, where you can like walk around with your open containers and gambling is legal. So this is still something that stands today.
Fucking cool.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
And I like that I like that they weren't just like, it's all illegal. They were just like, you can do what you want, but you got to do it here.
I mean, honestly, what better way to, like, control an uncontrollable environment?
Right.
Instead of, like, forcing the entire subculture underground, at least provide a safe space that is regulated, that can provide these services that people are going to search out anyway.
They're going to do it anyway.
Ugh.
So, yeah. So, it's Storyville.
We learned nothing from Prohibition. I would just like to stay.
Absolutely. This was a place where people went for a more respectable time. So this was the place that you could tell your friends you were going to. You're going to May's place.
Cool.
Love that.
Yeah.
That you could just tell people that you were going to a brothel and be like,
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, take me with you.
I cannot come to dinner tonight. I have to go to May's place.
Right.
It's like just as normal as like, I have to go grocery shopping. Like, yeah. I have to go get laid.
This was not the case for the White Elephant.
Okay.
So the White Elephant housed the less polite courtesans.
The lewd women.
The lewd women. The lewd women. The lewd nude women.
Okay. Okay, go on.
Nudies.
Nudie, lewdy ladies.
Oh, God. I want it on a t-shirt.
Oh, let's do it.
So the women of the White Elephant were known for stealing from their clients, and many of them were arrested regularly.
Oh.
The madam of this brothel was named Eliza Riddle.
Okay.
And the next thing, my next bullet is a quote from ghostcitytours.com. So I removed a not so friendly word for sex workers, and I put in sex workers of my own because I'm still just not going to say stuff that is inappropriate. Okay, so many sex workers were desperate for funds, desperate for cash, desperate for survival, willing to do whatever necessary. These women of ill repute were known for to stand in their doorways and lure men off the streets.
Yeah, like a siren song. Like men need luring.
Well, then they would beat them, rob them, and then these men would sometimes end up dead.
Hell yeah!
Buried in the courtyard of the den or released, but stripped of all of their personal worldly belongings. If there was any, like, good definition of the differences between us, you would 100% be over in the White Elephant.
Yup.
And I would be, like, counting my money dollars.
At May's place.
At May's place. Yeah. For sure.
Uh-huh.
So
I'm like, I just robbed this dude.
Yeah, you're like, I still got money, just dead now. So let's fast forward to 1960s. Dauphine Orleans main house was built in 1968 in the design of a French Quarter townhouse. The hotel officially opened August 15th, 1969 as the Dauphine Orleans Motor Hotel. Moving on to the 1990s, in 1991, they started renovation of the carriage house cottages, and the original brick walls, wooden posts, and handmade nails were uncovered and believed to have come from the blacksmith shop of the infamous pirate, Jean Lafitte.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, my
And then
God.
I went a whole down a rabbit hole about this pirate. But he was legit.
Like, hook hand parrot?
Yeah, fucking... like, on a ship, robbing people, pirate.
Honestly, a goal.
And then he settled in New Orleans and opened a blacksmith shop.
Okay, well, where else do pirates go?
Yeah.
What, they don't wind up in D.C.?
Well. And his ship sank. So I
Oh, well, that's a good way to plant your roots.
A disaster on his ship sinking. I haven't decided yet, but okay. it may happen.
I'm going to need you to make it happen, though.
Okay. So the hotel now sits just a block away from Bourbon Street in the French Quarter, like I mentioned. Of course, when history is this rich and New Orleans is a superstitious region, there are ghosts aplenty.
Oh, good.
So, first, we have our absolute favorite type of ghost story, a love gone wrong.
Oh, sure. She called the white lady?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Of course. They always are.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. But we actually know who this person is.
Oh, is it verified? Ooh, wait, I got chills. Hold on.
It's Millie, May's little sister. We talked about May, but this story is about her sister, Millie. Millie was not enchanted with the red light district and wanted a respectable life. As the story goes, Millie got her chance to leave the brothel life in 1861 when she met a Confederate soldier and they fall in love. Despite Millie's profession and all of that, he fell in love with her and he proposed. As Millie prepared for her wedding, on the day of her wedding, her fiancé was getting in one last gamble before he tied the knot. Sadly, he was shot and died in a brawl. Today, guests have spotted Millie's ghost in her lace wedding gown standing forlornly near May Bailey's.
I would lose all of my marbles if on my wedding day, my idiot fiance, Ian would never do this.
No.
By the way, he doesn't even like to go gambling with me. I wouldn't be the one gambling and getting shot. But like you for real couldn't hold your whole life together until after we got married.
Right. You had to go and get shot?
Say swear.
On wedding day.
If you were not already shot, I would shoot you.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Thank you.
So that is the white lady, or the lady in white.
All right. Poor Miss Millie. My heart hurts for her.
I know. Well, then we have, and we love a good ghostly soldier. So guests and staff often report seeing an apparition of a man dressed in a Confederate uniform.
Oh.
Even though there were no Civil War battles fought in New Orleans, it is not a far-fetched idea that the soldiers would come to New Orleans, and soldiers who were wounded or on leave would congregate in the Bardellos.
Sure.
So this figure is often seen in a courtyard and and is pacing around. He was nicknamed the Worried General. When Dr. Larry Montz of the International Society for Paranormal Research held an investigation at the Dolphin Orleans, his parapsychologist team was told the spirit's name is Eldridge. Eldridge. I like it.
Eldridge.
I know that this isn't his name, but in Frozen, the Weasel, Wesselton, that's what I picture Eldridge okay. like. Okay. That's the visual.
Okay, got it.
But there are many people who think that this is Millie's fiance.
Okay.
There are a couple of employees at the hotel who have had some good stories to tell as well. Janice has worked at the Dolphin for many years and has experienced so many paranormal activities. They are drawn to this woman.
Paranormal activities.
Activities. One day, she and one of the other employees were standing in the reading nook near the front entrance of the bar and lounge when all of the brochures on the shelves came tumbling down, scattering around the shocked pair like fallen confetti.
Ooh.
Can you imagine just standing there and having things like flutter rain around
down.
You? My dream. On another occurrence, Janice had arrived at work at her normal time, 5:30 a.m.
Ew.
Atrocious.
Find a different job.
She shut the front door, heard the lock latch, and was nearly halfway down the bar when she felt the strangest urge to turn around, only to find out that the door was open. Another day, she entered the bar just like any other day, except as she did so, she witnessed the first bar stool actually levitate off the ground.
I draw the line at floating furniture. I draw the line.
Nope.
No, thank you.
Put it back, please.
Put it back where that came from, or so help me.
I will whip you. So she said that this really frightened me when it raised off the floor. She told the interviewer of Ghost City Tours. There's also a bartending woman. There are stories that when Mae Bailey's was in its heyday, one of the women took great pleasure in mixing cocktails for her clients.
Oh.
And she was well known for making fantastic drinks. So today, the staff of the bar noticed that bottles are often misplaced or otherwise tampered with, and they believe that this is this 1800s mixologist doing what she loved.
Oh my God, just being a little bartender.
Yeah. And this is my favorite one. I love this so hard. There is a tiny dancer. One of the allures of New Orleans is the never-ending access to a good time. It's no surprise that patrons will sometimes have a little too much to drink and will struggle to find their way back to their rooms. Thank goodness for the young teen girl that shows them the way. Most people remember her in the morning, and that they remember most is that she seemed to lead the way down the hall, dancing and skipping all the while, not touching the ground as she leads them back to their room.
Oh.
How cute.
She's like a little guardian angel for drunk people.
I know.
Wholesome. She's like, follow me.
I'll take you back.
Come on. So she doesn't even like... When they get into the room, she's not even like, boo.
No, she's just like, good night, sleep tight.
This is the kind of helpful ghost that we want to invite into our household.
Absolutely. I would host a tiny teen ghost if she was kind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm part of a group on Facebook of like, esoteric witches, ghost stuff. And somebody posted this whole dramatic thing about how her kid was giving her hell in the morning, and she went to go, like, she put her coffee pot on her Keurig, or her mug on the Keurig, and, like, the kid distracted her, and so, like, blah, 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 and she was messing around, and she came back, and she, like, an hour later, had a piping hot cup of coffee, and she was like, how do I get rid of it? What do I do?
You don't!
That's what I, ow, I hit the table so hard. But that's what I said. I was
you
like,
you let it be!
This ghost is trying to help your ass.
Clearly was a mom.
They say thank you and leave it an offering. Did you make the ghost a cup? No, because you only think about yourself.
Selfish.
Selfish.
Rude. So, last but not least, I have a haunted review.
Yes, I love these.
All right, so, I keep saying so for every sentence. It's annoying even myself.
I did not even notice it.
Okay, I'm going to stop. I just decided. As for our stay, the first night, my daughter and I were awakened, although not spooked, by a strange shaking of our bed.
Oh.
As she is only 9 years old, she was a little scared, and I could only tell her I thought we perhaps were in the middle of a mild earthquake, or for lack of a better explanation. The whole room was shaking, but strangely enough, my husband and 7-year-old son were sound asleep in the bed right next to us, and even when I called out to my husband while the room was shaking at 12:15 a.m. on the morning of July 23rd, he kept snoring away and didn't awaken. The next day, I confirmed that my daughter had indeed witnessed and heard the shaking of the bed in the room, and she confirmed we were both staring at each other and talked through it to calm ourselves a little. If that's not a haunting, I don't know what is. I swear that we were both awake, not having a nightmare. And it lasted about 5 minutes, which is a long time when you think you're experiencing an earthquake.
Yeah.
I consoled my daughter by telling her to go back to sleep after the shaking ended and that if the earthquake was serious, we would most definitely be evacuated. Mm-hmm. As no alarm sounded, I too fell asleep. Later that day, everyone we asked, from the front desk to several guests at the pool, said there was not an earthquake, and my husband and son both said that they didn't hear or see anything at all. How weird. Nonetheless, I would recommend this hotel. Whomever it was probably friendly. As we both fell asleep a few minutes later, we were in room 307.
Oh, this is the appropriate reaction to ghosts.
I remember I probably was in middle school maybe, or early high school, maybe a freshman. And we had an earthquake here in Indiana. And it was bizarre. In Indiana, we don't have earthquakes.
No, ma'am.
And I have always been a little bit weird, and I've always loved paranormal stuff. So my teenage brain immediately went to ghosts.
In Indiana, it's the most logical explanation.
And I will never forget realizing that I might be in trouble mentally the next day. When no one else had the same realization and everybody else went immediately to earthquake. And I was like, I seriously, I didn't even bring it up at school because I was like, fucking ghosts, man. Like, it was going to happen eventually.
You thought it was just at your house.
Yeah. And then everybody was talking about an earthquake. And that was when it clicked. That I was like, oh, not ghosts.
We've had, I think in like my whole 30 years of living, we've had like 2 earthquakes.
Yeah.
Here. And they always happen at like 5:30 in the morning. And I just am never awake or feeling that kind of shit.
This was pretty jostly.
Was it jostly?
Yeah, it was. For me, I felt it. I felt like my entire bed was shaking. It felt like somebody was like, had the edges of my bed and was just pushing it back and forth. And I woke up and I just remember like looking at my ceiling, like asking for it to stop. And then it finally stopped. And I was like, but I clearly wasn't terrified enough to get up.
No.
So I just went back to sleep. And then the next day, everybody was like, man, that earthquake. And
like, oh, yeah, the earthquake for sure.
Real dumb.
Definitely not demons that I thought it was. But no earthquake.
That's where my brain goes.
For sure. Very cool. Well, it's funny that you mention a shaking and a quaking.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My story is a little, it's not a true ghost. It's not. And I have been thinking about doing this for a very long time.
Ooh.
And I couldn't decide if it was folklore or paranormal.
Okay. All right.
But I finally landed. It's paranormal. I came down hard on paranormal. So let me tell you about this thing.
Are you about to do the thing that I think you're about to do?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
I'm Alicia Holland.
And I'm Emily Rowney.
And this is Murder in the Rain.
For each new episode, we like to bring you a case straight from the Pacific Northwest.
From Bundy to bombings, serial killers, and wrongful convictions, we cover it all.
With the help of authors, psychologists, detectives, family members, and our producer, Josh, we dive deep into the cases you know and many you've never heard of.
The Pacific Northwest is full of unsolved cases, politically driven trials, and unsettling mysteries. Join us as we take you down the dark trails in our own backyard and tell you stories of Murder in the Rain.
The term Dybbuk box was first created and used by Kevin Manis to describe a wine cabinet in the item information for an eBay auction and as the subject of his original story describing paranormal events which he attributed to the box. Manis was a writer and a creative professional by trade, owned a small antiques and furniture refurnishing business in Portland, Oregon at the time. According to Manis's story, he bought the box at an estate sale in 2001. The following is the history and story of his acquisition of the box that Manis posted in the original eBay listing.
Ooh.
Because this poor box has been sold more times on eBay than you can freaking imagine.
Really?
Swear. So here's the story of the haunted box, exactly as it appeared. You form your own opinion. All of the events that I'm about to set forth in this listing are accurate and may be verified by the winning bidder with the copies of hospital records and sworn affidavits that I am including as part of the sale of this cabinet. During September 2001, I attended an estate sale in Portland, Oregon. The items liquidated at the sale were from the estate of a woman who had passed away at the age of 103.
Oh.
A great-granddaughter of the woman told me that her grandmother had been born in Poland, where she grew up, married, raised a family, and lived until she was sent to a Nazi concentration camp during World War II. She was the only member of her family who survived the camp. Her brothers, parents, a sister, husband, and 2 sons and a daughter were all killed.
Oh my God.
She survived the camp by escaping with some other prisoners and somehow ended up making her way to Spain, where she lived until the end of the war. I was told that she acquired a small wine cabinet listed there in Spain, and it was one of only 3 items that she brought with her when she immigrated to the United States. The other 2 items were a steamer trunk and a sewing box.
Aww.
I purchased the wine cabinet along with a sewing box and some other furniture at the estate sale. After the sale, I was approached by the woman's granddaughter who said, "I see you got the Dybbuk box." She was referring to the wine cabinet, and I asked her what a Dybbuk box was, and she told me that when she was growing up, her grandmother always kept the wine cabinet in her sewing room. It was always shut and set in a place that was out of reach. The grandmother always called it the Dybbuk box, and when the girl asked her grandmother what was inside, her grandmother spit 3 times through her fingers and said, "A Dybbuk, a Kesselim." The grandmother went on to tell the girl that the wine cabinet was never, ever to be opened. Ugh. So back to reality. The name of the woman who owned the box was Havila. Manis offered to give the box back to the family, but the granddaughter insisted that he take it, saying that the family did not and would not take the box back. She told him that the box had been kept in her grandmother's sewing room and was never opened. Ever. Ever opened.
So it is a Dementor hiding inside Pandora's box.
It's a Bogart.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yep. Yep. So what is a Dybbuk? Nobody asked, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Hey, Jenny.
Yeah.
What's a Dybbuk?
I'm so fucking happy you asked. Let me tell you. In Jewish mythology, a Dybbuk is a malicious, possessing spirit believed to be the dislocated soul of a dead person. It supposedly leaves the host body once it has accomplished its goal, sometimes after being helped. The term first appears in a number of 16th century writings, though it was ignored by mainstream scholarship until a play written by S. Anksky titled The Dybbuk popularized the concept in literary circles. Earlier accounts of possession were of demonic possession rather than by ghosts or spirits, and these accounts advocated orthodoxy among the populace as a preventative measure. So the Catholics and the U.S. government aren't the only ones to use a helping hand of fear-mongering to control its people.
Oh, fun. I love fear-mongering.
Same. For example, it was suggested that a sloppily made mezuzah, or entertaining doubt about Moses' crossing of the Red Sea, opened up one's household to a Dybbuk possession.
So if you doubt Moses?
If you doubt Moses, or you make your mezuzah too sloppy.
Ah.
So.
Won't do that. Got
no,
it.
Definitely don't do that. We can't do it on you. It's I looked it up. A mezuzah is a curled up piece of parchment.
Okay.
That has passages from the Torah written on it. And it is held in a like very ornate and beautiful tube.
Oh, okay.
Very cool. I thought it was bread. So.
I definitely thought it was something you bake.
Yeah. Nope.
Different. Oh, we are uncultured swine.
Uncultured. But listen, I'm here to tell you all about it. So very precise details of names and locations have been included in accounts of Dybbuk possession. So back to the box. I have a little bit of an origin story for you of like where this all came from.
Bring it.
Manis claims that before Havila got her hands on the box, somebody back in the day, was messing around with Kabbalistic workings they did not know how to control. If you recall, Kabbal is the basis of Jewish mythology. It is the mysticism side of that. And they were playing around with stuff that they had no business playing around with.
Don't do it.
And they summoned an entity from a dark realm.
Oh, no.
That unleashed a string of tragedies in the 20th century.
Did they bring us 2020?
World War II, the Korean War, Pol Pot, the communist leader of Cambodia, and in a very strange full circle, the Bhopal gas tragedy.
Oh, shit.
Right. When I read that, I was like, what? Wait a minute. That was not my research.
Wow.
I know. They have all been attributed to this one particular Dybbuk. So in attempt to rectify the wrong done, this individual worked tirelessly to defeat the evil, but was only able to fracture it. And the evil was broken into 10 pieces and bound to the confines of 10 Dybbuk boxes.
Horcruxes.
Very horcruxy.
This is a Harry Potter
spinoff. I've smelt this before. So those responsible sent these boxes all around the world to the furthest corner of the globe, hoping that they would get lost in the sands of time.
Oh, you can't fraction evil and hope it just goes away. Idiot's going to touch it in the future.
Well, spoiler alert, that's what happened.
I'm stressed.
Yes, and you should be. So it's said that the 10 boxes correlate to the Cabal Tree of Life concept.
All right.
Which is kind of, it's similar to chakras.
Yes.
They start with Kether, the crown, which sits at the top of the tree, and ends with Malkuth, the kingdom, at the root. There's also beauty, wisdom, power, understanding, mercy, victory, majesty, blah, 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 blah. Surprise! Zach Bunnyhop has two.
Shut up.
He just very recently revealed to the public, like within the past couple months, we knew he had one. We knew he had Malkuth. He just revealed that he also has Kether, the crown. Kevin Manis, over the years, has managed to collect six others and has them all in his possession.
Why are we collecting the Dragon Balls?
The
Dipikops. Why are we bringing them all together?
Oh, listen. So I know that, like, in all of our various PhDs, neither of us are good at math.
No.
So if you're not counting, that is 8 out of 10.
That's too many.
The two remaining Dybbuk boxes.
80% is still a B.
80. It's still enough to wreak havoc, honestly. So the remaining two are still hidden. Exactly the way that they're supposed to be.
Fucking leave them alone.
Stop looking for shit. All you right. Find a new Egyptian tomb, don't open it. You find a box buried somewhere in Poland, don't open it.
Okay, we have three rules around. We have four rules. We have four rules. When you go to jail, shut up. Don't open the box. Don't look for new shit. And don't read Latin.
Don't stay out of the shit. Stay out of the shadows.
Oh, and stay out of the shadows.
Stay out of the shadows. We have five golden rules. Good God almighty. Okay, but
God.
Wait, it's going to get worse.
Okay.
It's going to get worse. Just a little bit. So, it is said
that... A little bit worse.
It's going to get a little bit worse. If all 10 were to be collected and opened together, the Dybbuk living inside of them would reform and wreak havoc on our world. So, obviously, everybody who has ever owned a box has freaking popped that bad boy open like a can of Demon Pringles. They've all been, it's all been opened.
They all opened?
All of them. Every single one has been opened.
Do we know where the other two are?
No,
we don't.
No,
we don't know who's had them.
No. Nope.
We don't know where they went.
Nope.
We don't even know truly that there were 10.
No. I mean, no. We don't really. Maybe there was 11. Maybe the 11th one is Zach Bibbly Bob himself. Like, who knows?
Maybe there were only 8.
Better not be. I don't think Manis has opened any of them. Of course, the other two have been opened.
Because Zach has them.
So, upon opening the box at its acquisition, Manis wrote that he found that it contained 2 1920s pennies, a lock of blonde hair bound with a cord, a lock of black hair bound with a cord, a small statue engraved with the Hebrew word shalom, a small golden wine goblet, 1 dried rose bud, and a single candle holder with 4 octopus-shaped legs.
I do not think so.
I hate to tell you, but that's really what's in it. I got photos. It's a pretty badass candle holder. Like, aside from the fact that
it's demons.
Aside from that, Jewish demons.
Uh-uh.
It's a really beautiful piece.
We're just gonna duct tape that guy back shut.
We're gonna shimmy right past it. Listen, once you pop, the fun don't stop. And that's what I'm... Okay, hold on. I'll get there. Okay, so numerous owners of the box have reported that strange phenomena accompany it. When Manis's mother opened it, because he bought it... I don't know if I said that earlier. He bought it for her as a birthday gift.
Okay, so this is the guy that bought it from the estate sale to begin with.
Yes.
Got it.
Manis. When his mother opened it, she said that she felt a cold, dark wave of pure evil roll over her. Manis wrote that he experienced a series of horrific nightmares shared with other people while they were in possession of the box or when they stayed at his home while he had it. His mother suffered a stroke, a massive stroke, an hour after he gave it to her and she opened it, which was on her birthday, October 31st.
Incorrect. I hate it.
Wrong. 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 Every owner of the box has reported that it either smells of cat pee or jasmine flowers.
Oh,
yeah. All owners have been plagued with nightmares involving an old hag while they are in possession of the box.
I don't like it.
I know. It's bad. It's bad. Iosef Nitsky, a student at Truman State University in Kirksville, Missouri, and the last person to auction the box on eBay, claimed that the box caused lights to burn out in his home and his hair to fall out. Jason Haxton, director of the Museum of Osteopathic Medicine in Kirksville, Missouri, had been following Nitska's blogs regarding the box, and when he was ready to be rid of it, Nitska sold it to Haxton. Haxton wrote The Dybbuk Box, a book, and claimed that he subsequently developed strange health problems, including hives, coughing up blood, and head-to-toe welts.
That's a plague.
That's a plague. Haxton consulted with rabbis to try to figure out a way to seal the Dybbuk back in the box again, and was apparently successful in that feat.
Oh, really?
He was.
Huh.
So he took the freshly resealed demon box and hid it at a secret location, which he would not reveal, until he gave it to Zach Biggity Boop of Ghost Adventures to display in his wild-ass Las Vegas museum.
Which we will go to someday.
Which we will go to someday.
When we reach 10,000
listeners.
We're going to go to the Zach Baggins Bagel Boop Boop Bunny Museum. I feel like we can say his museum.
It's his museum.
Yeah. The Zach Baggins Museum of Horrors.
Feed me, Seymour. Okay. So, Zach Baked Beans is a really good friend with Post Malone. Obviously. Because, why? Sorry.
What?
I zigged.
Oh, what?
He's really good friends with Post Malone.
Okay.
Like, why wouldn't they
Posty.
Be besties? Yeah. They're like little trusty little friends. Like, they hang out all the time. And Zach flies him out to, like, his haunted home. It's wild.
So. Huh. Interesting choice.
And we also need to add Post Malone to the name, we need to add Post Malone to the list of individuals who have been affected by the box.
Oh, shit.
TMZ released a short black and white video of Zach blah, 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 and Post Malone chatting near the Dybbuk box when Zach reaches out and rests his hand on top of the, gunproof, bulletproof plexiglass that over the box.
Okay.
He didn't touch the box. He put his hand on the box. Yes.
Okay.
And he's sitting there, and you can see it in the video. He has his arm there for a second, and Post Malone reaches out and puts his hand on Zach's other shoulder. And apparently, that is just enough degrees of separation to get you cursed. You can see as soon as Post Malone does that, Zach backs up against the wall. He's breathing heavy. He's out of breath. He's crying. He's having a physical reaction because he said when he put his hand on it, it was like touching a battery and it shocked him and it held his hand there and he couldn't get it off.
Yikes.
Yikes.
And then what happened to Posty?
Well, shortly after, the rapper was involved in a plane emergency when two tires of his private jet blew out on the runway. A few days later, his house was broken into by gun-toting invaders. And a week after that, he was involved in a nearly fatal car crash when his Rolls Royce collided with another car.
Yikes.
The Dybbuk box has also seriously spooked some of the more hardened individuals on the Ghost Adventures team.
A tour guide named Virginia, who's worked with Zach Shaboobibop for many moons, had a terrifying experience. There's a long hallway that leads to the room that the box in a box lives in. And while she was leading a tour, Virginia had all these people following her down the hallway to see the box. This part of the tour requires all participants to be 18 years of older and to sign a waiver of liability. Just to see the room the box of the box is in.
We're gonna do it.
So, while walking down the hall, she saw a tall, black, cloaked figure manifest itself in the middle of her path. It held up one arm in a halt type of motion, and it charged through her.
When the Grim Reaper says stop,
stop.
Return to sender. Go back.
Bye. Turn around. You're done. You're done. Mm-hmm. You're not seeing the box today. Sorry about ya. So, she screamed and tried to regain herself in front of her group, and she was severely... She was shaken. When she retells the story, there's an interview with her where Zach conducts it, and when she is telling it, like, you can tell, like, she's still...
very upset.
She's, like, shook about it. Which, this is, like, a little extreme of a claim, even for the Ghost Adventures team. The issue that I have with it is that there was a girl on this tour with her who also saw it. And there's an interview with her. And you know when somebody is trying to, like, play into a, like, fantastical story.
Right.
This girl was traumatized. She was, like, crying and sobbing so hard she couldn't catch her breath. She was choking. She's confused and scared. She's terrified.
Wow.
And she says over and over, she's like, I can hear him in my head. He won't get out. He won't leave me alone.
Oh my God.
And she's having a very...
she's having a panic attack.
She's having a full-blown panic attack. And you can tell, like, in your heart watching her, she doesn't know what the fuck just happened. So, Bill Kearney is another member of the GA team. He also witnessed the black figure darting across the hall on separate occasions. So, clearly the Dybbuk box is linked with some majorly spook show things. So spooky, in fact, it inspired the 2012 horror film The Possession, which is not that great of a movie and could have been a lot cooler if they dove deeper into the depths of Jewish mysticism and Kabbalah. And I will let you draw your own opinions about this horror cruxy wine cellar.
Oh, God. Did you watch? I think it might have been one of the quarantine episodes of Ghost Adventures.
Yes, I did.
Where there was, like, the guy brought it in. It might have been the guy that owned it. But he was, like, talking to himself, acting super weird.
So there are two different episodes about the Dybbuk box. The quarantine one has the interview with Virginia and the girl who's on the tour.
Okay.
The other one is from the last guy who had it, Haxon.
Yeah.
Who buried it and pulled it out and gave it to Zach after he trapped the Dybbuk back in it.
Okay.
And him dropping it off is...
that video.
Yes. It is unnerving.
They went to a temple afterward, and that guy was, like, sweating bullets, super nauseous, did not want to be there.
Mm-mm.
And I think Zach has a lot of issues, but in this episode, I think that was one of the first times that I saw him actually look human and look very concerned for another person. Mm-hmm. And what could possibly be happening to them.
Yes.
Nope.
I mean, I feel like that show is, like, such a numbers game. Because, like, yes, you're going to play into it because you're making an entertaining show. Uh-huh. But I think I have seen times where he has legitimately gotten in over his head.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, damn.
Yeah, there was one I watched that it was the Artifacts show. He has Ghost Adventures Artifacts, and it talks a lot about the items that he has in his museum.
Mm-hmm.
And after he got there was a haunted mirror maybe that he got.
Ooh.
And he took it to his museum, and the next day his museum flooded. And he goes downstairs and there is just feet of water.
Oh,
and he's like,
no.
All of this is ruined. Like, it was a bunch of like stuff that they had in storage. It wasn't anything that they had
displayed.
But he was like, I am very creeped out. I am spooked. I don't want to go down here alone. And he was just like trying to like video. It's all a camera, like phone camera footage.
Oh God.
Cause he's like, I'm alone. My crew's not here.
I'm spooked.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yikes.
No.
You can believe whatever you want, but that museum, I can't even imagine the things in that museum.
He has the freaking murder mobile.
Yeah.
From what's his face? How do you pronounce his
Korchak?
Oh my God, hold on.
I don't know.
Annabelle, do you hear that Annabelle got out of her cage recently? In 2020?
That was a made-up story.
Oh, it was?
Yeah. Fake news. Sorry.
Honestly, it's 2020.
Because I looked into it. I was going to do it for a grab bag.
Oh, God. I got it. I'm not mad about it. But, like, honestly, I didn't even look into it. I'm like, yeah, that seems right. Honestly.
Yeah.
I'm just going to take that at face value.
I was like, yep. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. He has the murder mobile. He's got Annabelle. He does not
Kevorkian.
Have Annabelle. Kevorkian. He doesn't have Annabelle. He's got another doll, right? He's got Robert.
I think he has Annabelle. Doesn't he?
I don't
think so.
Did he
get it from the Warrens?
No, because the Warrens' son or nephew, I can't remember who it is, hates him.
Oh.
And will not give up the doll to Zach.
I love that.
Over his dead body. So, yeah.
It still remains in a glass box at the Warrens Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut. So you were correct.
Wait, there's a one in Connecticut?
Annabelle, Monroe, Connecticut.
Oh.
That's where the museum is. The Warrens Museum.
The Warren Museum. I was like,
yes.
Okay, yes. I would also like to go to the Warren Museum.
I think he does have Robert the doll.
I'm pretty sure that's who he has because he brought Robert to the Island of the Dolls.
Yes. That episode is terrifying.
The
Island of the Dolls. So spidery.
I tried to research it for an episode.
Yeah.
And there is not a lot of information. And it's so hard to get to that people just don't go very often.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're interested in the Island of the Dolls, highly recommend the Ghost Adventures episode.
Go there, videotape it, send it to us. We'll cover it.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
No.
What is your bright and shiny?
My bright and shiny is that I get to spend my evening sitting here telling spooky stories with my best friend on a little passion project that we have that has like somehow turned into a whole thing.
Yeah, it has turned into a whole thing.
It has turned into a whole thing.
I'm so proud of us.
I am too. And I'm happy for our listeners who have made this a whole thing instead of just like us sitting at my kitchen table drunk.
Which we would be doing anyway.
Yes, correct.
Highly recommend. Aww.
What's your bright and shiny?
I love you. Aww. My bright and shiny is I got this really adorable scarf from a friend, and it's not something that I probably would have picked out for myself, but I really like it, and I plan on wearing it because somebody else picked it out for me, and I really appreciated it.
Aww.
And it's like pink and leopard print.
Oh, I love.
So I'm very excited.
We love good gift givers.
Yeah. So that's my bright and shiny. I'm excited about wearing my scarf because it is chilly.
Yee.
Yeah.
Wholesome love. Thank you for listening. Welcome to the new cycle.
Yeah.
Follow us on the social meds.
Yes.
Email us creepy crawly stories that you have.
Yeah. Email us to bright shiny or tag us in your bright shinies.
Mm-hmm. A little bit grim at gmail.com.
Yes. And then our Instagram is A Little Bit Grim Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook. We have a group, A Little Bit Grim Podcast. And yeah, slide into our DMs. Tell us what you want to hear. We would love feedback. Any story ideas that you have, send them our way.
Let us know.
Yeah. So have a good day. Stay safe and be kind to each other.
Goodbye.